A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Armin and Corn. We did some fascinating episodes about the history of food in the period of biblical Israel. And we mentioned that there is a tendency, I think a universal tendency, to ascribe our own understanding of the world around us onto ancient texts. And we mentioned as a case in point, bread. Yes, bread is in the food stuff. And we would assume that if we read a passage from the Bible that mentions bread, that we're thinking about a baguette or a pita bread or something familiar to us these days. And we talked in that episode about how the bread in the Bible was barley bread, very, very dense, flat. It is a fantastic recipe, which Herman provided one such recipe for, and it's a very worthwhile afternoon project for anyone who wants to experience what bread might have tasted like if you lived in ancient Israel. I've done it. I've been there. Am I a barley bread enthusiast as a result? I'm not, but it was an experience worth doing. Here's another term that we come across a lot if we're reading the classic Jewish texts, like the Bible or the Talmud for that matter. In Hebrew, what's called a chatzer. A chatzer is a courtyard. And the reason that I mention this and bring this up is we've talked before about the challenge of parenting in today's world, especially when you've got two expat parents like myself and Hannah. We really feel acutely how challenging it is for two people at the best of times to take on the feat of bringing up even one little human. I kind of marvel at some of the families I see here who are doing, you know, have these flocks of five or more kids. And Ezra, as beautiful and wonderful as he is, we're lying together in bed and he's dozed off as I record this. It's been a lot of work and we're both kind of a bit exhausted, but it's been the best experience of our lives so far. Anyway, in these classic family arrangements, you'd commonly have a whole cluster of people and the courtyard was kind of the central space. Now, what's interesting is this is not something in multi-generational homes in Israel that you really see much of today at all. But there are, ironically, in the ultra-religious parts of Jerusalem, a couple of very unique enclaves within neighborhoods where you have this this courtyard. And it's a little window into a time gone by when grandparents might have lived together as, you know, and parents and each maybe had a little home clustered around a courtyard, which was kind of the family's common space. In Arabic culture, you see this as well, actually more prevalently today. And in Druze, I remember going to Majul Shams and seeing some absolutely amazing implementations, if you want to use that word, of this concept. And I was just struck, I had a very close relationship with my grandparents, Allah Shalom, growing up. And I just think, wow, that's really beautiful, this concept of having multi-generations just kind of living together. I'd love to talk about this concept, multi-generation family living, not just involving the courtyard mechanism, but including where that is the norm. Is it truly something that kind of transcended cultures and design patterns in the ancient world? And where do we see it actually done most today? Herman and Corn, let's talk about multi-generational living and the classic courtyard of biblical Israel in today's episode of My Word Prompts.
When you read the word courtyard, what do you picture? Probably a patio, maybe a grill, some potted plants, a private little outdoor amenity you use, maybe 6 months out of the year.
Which is exactly wrong, if we're talking about the ancient world. The biblical chatzer wasn't decorative outdoor space, it was the operating system of family life. Cooking, childcare, livestock, craft work, grain storage, everything that happened in that shared central space.
Here's why this matters right now. Housing costs are absurd. Parenting isolation is at an all-time high, and quietly, without much fanfare, architects and urban planners are taking a second look at the multi-generational courtyard model. The thing we spent a century designing out of existence.
Daniel sent us this one, and it connects two threads we've circled before. We did that episode on biblical food, barley bread, dense as a brick, nothing like the fluffy pita we imagine, and the core insight was that we project our own experience onto ancient texts. We read bread and picture a baguette. We read courtyard and picture a patio.
The Chatzer is the architectural version of the barley bread problem. Same projection, higher stakes, because this isn't just about what ancient people ate. It's about how they lived together, raised children, shared resources, and structured the family itself.
The prompt gets personal with it. Two parents, one small child, the exhaustion that comes from doing it all solo. Then you look at the ancient model. Four or five adults, multiple older children, all sharing the load in a space built for exactly that. And you start wondering whether we lost something we might actually need back.
The question isn't just what was a chatzer. It's why did it work? Why did it mostly disappear? And what, if anything, can we take from it without romanticizing the past into something it wasn't?
Which is the trap, right? You hear multi-generational courtyard living, and it sounds either idyllic or claustrophobic, depending on your relationship with your extended family.
The real answer, as usual, is more interesting than either version. So let's start with the basics. What exactly was a chatzer, architecturally and socially, and why should we care about a 3,000-year-old housing layout?
A chatzer in ancient Israel wasn't one house with a nice open area. It was a compound, multiple small dwellings, each housing a nuclear unit within the extended family, all of them opening onto a shared central courtyard. Grandparents in one dwelling, each married son and his family in another, unmarried children and widowed relatives in between.
It's not grandma lives in the spare bedroom. It's grandma has her own small house, your uncle's family has theirs, your parents have theirs, and everyone shares the space in the middle.
That shared space was not ornamental. Archaeologically, when we dig up Iron Age courtyard houses, and I want to be specific here, we're talking Iron Age 2, roughly 1000 to 586 BCE, we find multiple ovens in that central courtyard, multiple storage silos, evidence of small livestock, craft production, grain processing. This wasn't a backyard, it was a pre-industrial cooperative.
The chatzer is the economic unit, not just the family unit.
They're the same thing in this period. The household economy and the family structure are one system, and the architecture enforces that. Everyone's door opens inward, onto the shared space. There's often one main entrance to the compound from the outside. You literally can't come and go without passing through the common area.
Which means privacy, as we understand it, wasn't really on the menu.
Not even slightly. And that's going to matter when we get to why this model eventually broke down. But for now, the key thing is, the chatzer solved a set of problems that every pre-industrial society faced. Defense, shared resources, climate control, childcare, elder care, labor pooling during harvest. It's a remarkably efficient design for a world where survival depends on family cooperation.
Here's what's striking. This layout wasn't unique to ancient Israel. You see essentially the same pattern in Roman atrium houses, Chinese Siheyuan courtyard homes, the traditional compounds across the Middle East and North Africa. Independent invention of the same logic.
Because the constraints were universal. If you need one well, you don't dig five. If you need one oven, you don't build five and fuel five fires every morning. If you need to protect your family from raiders or wild animals, you build inward-facing rooms around a secure central space with one entrance. The chatzer is what happens when you optimize for shared survival rather than individual privacy.
The biblical text reflects this as the default. You see chatzer used throughout. Deuteronomy, Judges, Nehemiah, not as some special arrangement, but as the normal residential unit for extended families. It's the background assumption of daily life.
Which is why we misread it so completely. When a modern reader encounters courtyard in a biblical passage, the mental image is a nice paved area with maybe a lemon tree and some chairs. The ancient reality was a working space, with animals, grain, smoke from the oven, children everywhere, multiple generations in constant proximity. The chatzer was loud, busy, and fundamentally collective.
To understand why it made sense, we have to look at the problems it was solving. And they weren't just architectural. They were social, economic, and especially relevant to this prompt. They were about parenting.
Let's talk about the parenting piece directly, because the prompt puts it front and center. Two parents, one child, both exhausted. That's the modern nuclear family experience in a nutshell. Now compare that to a Chaucer compound with, say, four or five adults. Grandparents, parents, an aunt or uncle, plus older children who can help with younger ones.
The labor distribution is fundamentally different. In the modern model, two adults are responsible for everything. Income, childcare, cooking, cleaning, emotional support, education, scheduling. In the Chaucer model, those functions are distributed across multiple adults and older children. If one adult gets sick, the system doesn't collapse.
This isn't just nice in theory, it's a risk pooling mechanism. Pre-industrial life was precarious. Crop failure, illness, injury, childbirth complications, any of these could devastate a nuclear family. The extended family compound absorbs shocks that would destroy an isolated household.
Which brings us to something the prompt mentions that I think is worth sitting with. The experience of seeing families with five or more kids and wondering how they do it. Part of the answer, historically, is that they weren't doing it alone.
A mother in an ancient Israelite chaucer wasn't solo parenting five children in an apartment while her husband worked elsewhere. She was parenting alongside her mother-in-law, her sisters-in-law, her older daughters. The childcare load was distributed by default. The architecture made it impossible not to share the work.
There's a knowledge transmission angle here, too. Grandparents in the chaucer weren't just free babysitting. They were the repository of practical knowledge. How to handle a difficult birth, when to plant, how to manage a fever, what to do when the grain stores show signs of rot. In a world without written manuals or internet access, living with elders was the information infrastructure.
We have archaeological evidence that makes this concrete. Excavations at Tel Beit Shemesh show multiple ovens of different sizes in the same courtyard, suggesting different cooking tasks happening simultaneously, probably by different women in the extended family. At Hazor, the storage silos and courtyard compound show centralized grain storage for the whole family unit, not individual household stores.
The chaucer wasn't just where people lived, it was how they survived. Shared grain storage means shared risk. One oven for baking means shared labor. Multiple adults within earshot means shared childcare. The architecture and the social structure are the same thing.
This is where the modern contrast gets really sharp. We've spent the last century designing housing for maximum privacy and minimum friction. Separate entrances, separate kitchens, separate everything. The chaucer did the opposite. It maximized contact and minimized the ability to opt out of family life.
Which, let's be honest, is both the appeal and the nightmare, depending on your family and your temperament. But we'll get to the downsides. First, I want to sit with what was gained. Because the prompt's personal story about parenting exhaustion is not unique. It's structural.
It's absolutely structural. The nuclear family, two adults, isolated in a single dwelling, responsible for everything, is historically anomalous. For most of human history, in most cultures, child-rearing was a distributed activity embedded in extended family networks. The chaucer is just one architectural expression of that deeper pattern.
The pattern persists in places we don't always think to look. The prompt mentions the ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods in Jerusalem, Meir Sharim, the Bukharin Quarter, where courtyard compounds still function as multi-generational family spaces. These aren't museum pieces. People live in them.
The Bukharin Quarter is a fascinating case. Built in the 1890s specifically for extended Bukharin Jewish families, it was designed from the start as a courtyard neighborhood. Many of the original compounds are still occupied by descendants of the founding families. You can walk through there and see the chaucer logic still operating. Multiple dwellings around a shared central space, grandparents and grandchildren in constant contact.
The Druze homes in Majdol Shams that the prompt mentions. Same pattern, different cultural context. Multi-generational compounds with the courtyard as the functional heart of family life. These aren't historical reenactments. They're living communities where the chaucer model never died.
Which raises the obvious question, if this model was so functional, why did it mostly disappear? Why did we spend the 20th century systematically designing it out of existence?
That's the next piece, And the answer is more complicated than modernity ruined everything. But before we get there, I want to name something. The Chatzer solves real problems. Isolation, childcare distribution, resource sharing, elder care, that we are now, in 2026, trying to solve again from scratch. Co-housing, multi-generational mortgages, ADU policy, the village model for aging parents. We're reinventing the courtyard without calling it that.
We're doing it because the problems the Chatzer solved didn't go away. We just made them invisible by pushing them onto individual families and calling it independence. The parenting exhaustion in the prompt isn't a personal failing. It's what happens when a system designed for distributed caregiving gets replaced by one designed for maximum autonomy.
The Chatzer matters not because we should rebuild it. We probably shouldn't, and can't, but because it forces us to ask what we traded away, and whether the trade was worth it.
Which is the barley bread problem all over again. We read courtyard and picture a patio. We read family and picture the nuclear unit. And the ancient texts are describing something fundamentally different, something we might actually need to understand right now as housing costs soar and parents burn out and aging relatives face isolation.
Let's dig into the logic. Why did the Chatzer work? What broke it? And what, if anything, can we adapt without romanticizing the past into a fantasy it never was?
To do that, we need to define the thing precisely, because the word courtyard is doing a lot of misleading work in our heads. A Chatzer in the biblical sense was a compound of multiple small dwellings. Each nuclear unit had its own sleeping quarters and maybe a small cooking space, all arranged around a shared central courtyard.
Grandparents in one room or small structure, each married son's family in another, and the courtyard is the common denominator. Everyone's front door opens onto the same space.
That central space was where the collective life happened. Cooking, childminding, tool repair, grain grinding, textile work, livestock, all of it. The individual dwellings were for sleeping and storage and not much else. The courtyard was the living room, kitchen, workshop, and daycare.
Which means the Chatzer is fundamentally a multifamily design. It's not one house with a patio. It's multiple households sharing one economic and social center. The architecture assumes extended family co-residence as the norm.
The biblical text bears this out. In Deuteronomy, when the law describes who is within your gates, the Chatzer is the unit of household membership. In Judges, the Chatzer is where family business gets conducted. In Nehemiah, the rebuilding accounts treat Chatzer compounds as the basic residential building block of Jerusalem. The nuclear family alone, in a detached house, would have been the weird exception that required explanation.
Here's where the barley bread parallel really bites. Just as we read bread and picture a fluffy loaf when the text means dense barley flatbread, we read courtyard and picture a private amenity. The ancient Chatzer was the opposite of private. It was the least private space in the compound by design.
We know this archaeologically, not just textually. The four-room house, the standard Israelite dwelling type in the Iron Age, often appears in clusters around a shared courtyard. Each four-room house might house a nuclear unit, but the cluster forms the Chatzer. The shared oven, the shared silo, the shared work surfaces. These are in the common space, not inside individual dwellings.
When a modern Israeli hears Chatzer today, they might think of the small shared space behind an apartment building, maybe some laundry lines and a dumpster. That's already closer than the American patio, but it's still not the thing. The biblical Chatzer was an operating system, not a feature.
It was loud. Multiple generations, multiple young children, animals, cooking fires, craft work, all in a shared space with no real sound insulation. The Chatzer was not tranquil.
Nor was it optional. You couldn't close your door and retreat into a private family bubble. The architecture made opting out nearly impossible. That's either community or claustrophobia, depending on who you are and who your relatives are.
Which is exactly the tension we need to hold through this whole discussion. The Chatzer solved real problems. Distributed labor, shared resources, built-in childcare, elder care, knowledge transmission, but it solved them by eliminating most of what we now consider basic privacy.
The question isn't just, what did we lose when the Chatzer disappeared? It's also, what did people gain when they left?
To understand that, let's start with the architectural logic, because the Chatzer wasn't just a cultural preference, it was solving hard physical problems. Defense is the most obvious one. A courtyard compound with thick outer walls and a single entrance is effectively a small fortress. In the Iron Age, when raiding was a constant threat, the chotzer design meant your extended family could secure itself, its livestock, and its grain stores behind one lockable gate.
That single entrance is a design choice you see across cultures. The Chinese Sihe Yuan does the same thing. One gate, high walls facing outward, all windows opening inward onto the courtyard. The Roman Atrium House is a variation on the same logic. You're not just building a home, you're building a defensible perimeter.
It's convergent evolution. The same problem, the same constraints, the same solution. Limited building materials, need for security, need to share a water source and an oven, need to keep extended family close for labor. The Chatsur, the Sihe Yuan, the Atrium House, the Druze Courtyard Compound, they're all answers to the same set of constraints.
The one oven. This is a resource sharing logic that's easy to miss if you're used to every apartment having its own plumbing and its own kitchen. Building and maintaining an oven was expensive and fuel intensive. It made no sense to duplicate it per nuclear unit.
The climate logic is just as important. In a hot climate like Israel's, the courtyard creates a microclimate. The surrounding buildings shade the central space during the hottest part of the day. At night, the courtyard radiates stored heat back out. In winter, the enclosed space blocks wind. This isn't decorative, it's passive climate control before anyone had that term.
You've got defense, resource pooling, climate management, all solved by the same physical layout. That's elegant design. And then you layer the social logic on top, and it gets even more rational.
The social logic is where the parenting angle really lands. In a chatser, grandparents aren't visitors. They're in the next dwelling every single day. When a child is sick, when a mother needs a break, when there's a difficult birth, the help is literally across the courtyard. You don't schedule a grandparent visit. They're just there.
It's not just grandparents. Older children, siblings, cousins, are natural helpers for younger children. A 10-year-old cousin can watch a toddler while the adults work. That's not childcare as a formal category. It's just life. The labor of raising children is distributed across the entire compound, not concentrated on two exhausted adults.
This is the contrast that makes the prompt story so resonant. Two parents alone, raising one child, and they're exhausted. That's not a character flaw. That's what happens when you take a task that was historically distributed across four or five adults and multiple older children, and you compress it onto two people who are also supposed to earn income, maintain a household, and somehow stay sane.
The chatsa was a risk-pooling mechanism, and not just for childcare. If one adult got sick, couldn't work the fields, couldn't tend the livestock, the extended family absorbed the loss. If one nuclear unit had a bad harvest, the shared grain stores meant they didn't starve. The chatsa was insurance before insurance existed.
We see this in the archaeology. At Tel Beit Shemesh, the courtyard compounds show multiple ovens of different types and sizes, indicating different cooking tasks happening simultaneously. At Hazor, the storage silos are centralized in the courtyard, not distributed to individual dwellings. These weren't independent households sharing a wall. They were a single economic unit.
Which means the chatsur was, in modern terms, a cooperative. Shared livestock, shared tools, shared grain storage, shared labor. The economic logic is inseparable from the architectural logic and the social logic. You can't pull them apart.
The Druze compounds in Majdal Shams that the prompt mentions, they're still operating on this logic. You walk into one of those courtyards and you see the same pattern, multiple generations, shared central space, the economic and social life of the family happening in the open. It's not a historical reenactment, it's a functioning system.
The ultra-Orthodox enclaves in Jerusalem are a similar case. Mir Sharim, the Bukharan Quarter. These are living fossils of the Chatsa model, and they work because the social structure still matches the architecture. Extended family co-residence is still the norm. If you tried to impose that layout on a community that expects nuclear family privacy, it would fail. The architecture and the social contract have to align.
That's the key insight about why the Chatsur appeared independently across cultures. It's not that ancient Israelites, Romans, and Chinese all had the same cultural values. It's that they all faced the same material constraints. Limited building materials, need for defense, need to share expensive infrastructure like ovens and wells, need to pool labor for survival. And the courtyard compound is the rational response to those constraints.
The parenting exhaustion we're talking about is a byproduct of removing those constraints without replacing the distributed systems they enabled. We have our own ovens now. We have our own wells. We have police departments instead of thick courtyard walls. But we also have our own childcare burden, our own elder care burden, our own isolation.
That isolation is expensive in ways we don't always calculate. In a Chatzer, elder care wasn't a separate category of expense or a crisis you plan for. The grandparents aged in place, surrounded by family who could help with daily tasks, while the grandparents contributed childcare and knowledge in return. It was a reciprocal system, not a one-way dependency.
Which is exactly what we're trying to recreate with aging-in-place programs and multi-generational housing policy. We're solving a problem the Chatzer solved 3,000 years ago. But we're doing it with policy instruments instead of architecture, and we're surprised it's harder.
If the Chatzer was so rational, and it was, why did it mostly disappear? The answer isn't just modernity ruined everything, though modernity definitely helped.
Three things killed it, and they all happened at roughly the same time. First, the nuclear family became the ideal. After World War II, housing policy across the West, and Israel imported a lot of this, was built around the single-family home with a private yard. The Chatzer wasn't just unfashionable. It was something policy actively worked against.
The GI Bill in America, the post-war housing estates in Europe, the Shikunim in Israel, all of them assumed a married couple and their children in one unit, not an extended family compound. The architecture of the welfare state was nuclear family architecture.
Second force. The economy changed. When your household stops being a unit of agricultural production, when you no longer have shared livestock, shared grain stores, a communal oven, the economic logic of the Chatzer evaporates. You don't need to pool labor if everyone's working for wages in different places.
Third, and this one is under-discussed, zoning laws made the Chatzer illegal. Most Western and Israeli zoning codes define a residential unit in ways that make multifamily courtyard compounds impossible to build. One kitchen per dwelling unit. Minimum lot coverage ratios. The Chatzer isn't just out of fashion, it's out of code.
You couldn't build one if you wanted to. We didn't just stop building Chatzer-style housing because we preferred privacy. We made it illegal, then forgot it was ever legal, then started romanticizing it as a lost world.
It's not entirely lost. The ultra-Orthodox Jerusalem enclaves and the Druze villages are the obvious survivors, but there's more. Denmark and the Netherlands have had co-housing movements since the 1970s, unrelated families sharing a central courtyard, a common house, communal meals. It's the Chatzer logic applied to people who chose each other rather than people who were born into it.
In the US, accessory dwelling units, ADUs, granny flats, are having a moment. A 2023 Pew survey found that 15% of Americans now live in multi-generational households, up from 7% in 1970. That's not courtyard living, but it's the same impulse. Grandparents in the back house, young family in the main house, shared garden in between.
Japan has been doing this for decades. Multi-generational homes with separate entrances, but shared common areas. The architecture acknowledges that you want proximity without forced togetherness. Separate doors, shared kitchen. That's a design answer to the Chatzer's central tension.
Which brings us to the tension itself. Because the prompt's nostalgia is real, the image of grandparents and cousins and children all in shared space is genuinely beautiful, but it's incomplete. People left the Chatzer for reasons.
The lack of privacy wasn't a bug for them, but it would be for us. Constant proximity to your in-laws. Every argument audible to the entire extended family. No space that was truly yours. The Chatzer encoded patriarchal power structures, too. The senior male controlled the compound, and younger couples had limited autonomy.
We have to ask honestly, what did people escape when they left the Chatzer? Some of them escaped exactly that. The mother-in-law who never stops criticizing, the father who controls the finances, the inability to make your own decisions about your own children.
The Chatzer was community, but it was also surveillance. Those two things are harder to separate than we like to admit.
The question becomes, can we get the benefits without the downsides? And I think the answer is yes, but not by recreating the physical form. You don't need to rebuild a courtyard compound. You need to rebuild the principle. Distributed caregiving, shared resources, intentional proximity.
People are already doing this, just not calling it a Chatzer. Kibbutz Lotan's ecological neighborhood, unrelated families sharing a courtyard like common space, communal meals, shared childcare, but everyone has their own private dwelling they can retreat to.
Home share programs in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem match elderly homeowners with young families. The older person gets companionship and help with daily tasks. The young family gets reduced rent and built-in grandparent figures. It's not a chatzer, but it's the chatzer logic. Reciprocal exchange across generations.
The village model for aging parents is the same idea. Instead of one family absorbing all the elder care, a group of families shares it. Shared childcare arrangements among unrelated families. Three families, one babysitting rotation, everyone gets two nights off. That's a chatzer without the courtyard.
What we might actually reclaim isn't the architecture. It's the principle that caregiving shouldn't be a solo sport. The chatzer's core innovation was distributing the load. The physical form was just one way to do that.
This is where I think the prompt's personal story is the key. Two parents, one child, both exhausted, that's not a failure of effort. That's a structural problem. The chatzer solved it by making sure there were always extra hands. The load was spread across four or five adults, not concentrated on two.
The modern version of this is surprisingly low-tech. Intentional childcare cooperatives. Three or four families who agree to trade babysitting nights. Shared meal prep with neighbors. You cook for three households on Monday. Someone else cooks for you on Wednesday. Multi-generational housing arrangements, even informal ones, like renting an apartment from an older adult who wants some help with errands in exchange for occasional childcare.
None of this requires a courtyard. It requires intention. The architecture of the chatzer forced the cooperation. You couldn't avoid your in-laws because their door was 12 feet from yours. Today you have to choose it, which is harder in some ways, but also means you can opt out when you need to.
Which is actually the improvement. The chatzer's weakness was that you couldn't escape. The modern version, the babysitting co-op, the shared meal rotation, has an off switch. You get the distributed load without the forced proximity.
The data backs this up. That 2023 Pew survey showing 15% of Americans in multi-generational households. That's not nostalgia driving it. It's economics. Housing costs, childcare costs, elder care costs. People are rediscovering the chatzer logic because they can't afford not to.
Israel has its own version of this. The multi-generational mortgage program, introduced in 2022, offers reduced interest rates for families building or buying homes designed for two generations under one roof. The government isn't romanticizing the chatzer. It's responding to the same cost pressures.
Actionable insight. Number one, the unit of caregiving is the problem, not the amount of effort. Two adults raising children in isolation is historically anomalous and functionally exhausting. Expanding the circle, even by one or two people, changes the math dramatically.
Actionable insight number two is about how we read. When you encounter a term like chatzer in an ancient text, the right question isn't, what does this remind me of? It's what problem was this solving? The chatzer wasn't quaint. It wasn't picturesque. It was a rational response to real constraints. Defense, resource scarcity, labor pooling, survival.
That question, what problem was this solving, is a universal solvent for anachronism. Apply it to everything in the Bible, the Talmud, any ancient source. The barley bread, the courtyard, the city gate, the Sabbath year. They weren't aesthetic choices. They were solutions.
For anyone in Jerusalem or visiting, there's something you can actually go see. The Bukharan Quarter, less touristy than Mir Sharim, built in the 1890s explicitly as courtyard housing for extended Bukharan Jewish families. Many of the original compounds are still occupied by descendants. You can walk through and observe how the space functions. It's not a museum. It's still alive.
What you'll notice is that the courtyard isn't decorative. It's where things happen. Laundry, cooking, children playing, old men playing backgammon. The private spaces are small. The shared space is where life is lived. That inversion is the whole idea.
For the more ambitious listener, look at your own housing situation and ask what one shared resource could reduce your isolation. A garden shared with neighbors. A babysitting rotation. A shared car. You're not building a chatzer. You're building one of its functions.
The architecture followed the social logic, not the other way around. So start with the social logic. Who are the people you could share a load with? That's the Chatzer's real legacy. Not the stones, but the structure of mutual dependence. That legacy brings me to a question I keep coming back to. As housing costs push young families out of cities and aging parents into isolation, are we heading toward a voluntary return to multi-generational living? Or is the Chatzer truly a relic? Something that only made sense before electricity and labor markets and the idea of personal space?
I think the answer is both. The physical Chatzer isn't coming back. We're not about to see new subdivisions laid out as courtyard compounds. But the logic underneath it is already returning, and not because people got nostalgic. Because the math changed. Childcare costs more than rent in some cities. Elder care bankrupts families. Housing prices mean young adults can't leave, and old adults can't downsize.
The next housing crisis might not be solved by building more units. It might be solved by rethinking who shares them. The Chatzer offers a design pattern, not a blueprint. It says, put people who depend on each other in proximity, give them shared resources, and let the architecture make cooperation easier than isolation.
We're already seeing fragments of this. The 15% of Americans in multi-generational homes, the co-housing movement in Northern Europe, Israel's multi-generational mortgage program, none of it calls itself a Chatzer revival. But all of it is reaching for the same thing. Distributed caregiving, shared costs, less isolation.
The difference, and I think this is the crucial difference, is choice. The ancient Chatzer wasn't chosen. You were born into it, and you couldn't leave. The modern versions work precisely because people opt in. The Danish co-housing community, the babysitting co-op, the family that builds a granny flat for an aging parent, those are voluntary arrangements. That changes everything about the power dynamics.
Which might be the real modern innovation. Not the architecture, but the ability to say yes or no. The Chatzer gives us the pattern. Modernity gives us the off switch. That combination might actually be better than either one alone.
If you tried the barley bread from a few episodes back, and I hope some of you did, though I suspect most of you took one bite and questioned our friendship, the Chatzer is the next experiment, not something you bake, something you build. Or at least, something you think about building.
Or more realistically, something you think about adapting. One shared resource, one expanded circle, one person you share the load with. You don't need a courtyard. You need one other adult who has a key.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The English word taboo entered European languages via Captain James Cook's 1777 account of his visit to Tonga, where he encountered the Polynesian concept of tapu, meaning something sacred, forbidden, or set apart. Cook's journals record Tongan villagers refusing to sit at the same table as their king, explaining it as tapu. The word spread through English with remarkable speed for the era, appearing in anthropological writing within 2 decades. The original Polynesian term, however, was less about prohibition and more about the careful management of spiritual power, a nuance that got flattened in translation, as these things tend to.
Right. This has been my Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more than you'd think. We're at myweirdprompts.com and on Spotify. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.